Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 14. And 7s and 14s are something the Steelers got a lot of last night, Dave, as they put up 38 against the Washington Redskins. A little bit of a slow first quarter, but a 38-16 kind of pounding and a great way to start the season.
Yeah, absolutely, and you hit right on it there. Boy, it was a kind of a rough start there at the beginning, and it was like, oh no, here we go again. I mean, how many times have we seen this team kind of start slow offensively, and then quick turnover too, and down a couple possessions right away, but they did get it ironed out, and going back through the tape two times already, this was a fun one to go back through.
It really was, and you know, let's get right to it because we got so much to cover. Of course, we'll have the Mike Tomlin press conference today, so we'll get to that tomorrow, as well as having a beat writer to talk about the Bengals. So we'll be double dipping here over the next 2 days. Dave, first of all, good news. Really, the only injury of note was Ryan Shazier, and a little bit awkward or a little bit unusual in the sense that he is saying that everything's absolutely fine. His knee's fine. He was taken out just as a precaution. But at the same time, he was taken out of the game while it was still a one-score game. The Skins had just scored and got the ball back. So kind of an odd time to be taking a precaution when it's, whatever it was, an 8-point lead.
Yeah, I imagine at one time the Iraqi Minister of Defense said it's all fine, fine as well, Look, keep your fingers crossed is all I can say. We know the history with Ryan Shazier. I haven't tracked down when the actual injury took place yet. I hope to be able to do that later on today. He's saying he's fine, but as you said, close game. Why was he taken off the field as a precaution there? And we'll have to see what Mike Tomlin says Tuesday during his press conference, and then obviously on a short week here, whether or not Shazier winds up playing. And look, when he was on the field, he played extremely well. I think something like to the tune of 6 total tackles. I believe he had, an interception in there. A key. You want to talk about a play that's probably underrated that won't get a lot of run, David. What about that pass breakup in the end zone on that ball to Jordan Reed when the Steelers blitzed 2 off the edge on that play? Shazier got his head around just in time. And got his hand up to bat away that pass there for a pass deflection. But prior to leaving that game, I thought he played well.
He did play well, and he missed a tackle in the very first play, but then he got a tackle for loss. We saw, you talked about the pass breakup. He caused his third career forced fumble and second career interception on back-to-back plays. I mean, I talked about it before the game. I've mentioned it a couple times. I think the guy, if he stays healthy, could be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year. He is a dynamite player. He's a unique player. He is very fast. He's not a heavy guy. He's playing a lot closer to the weight that Jack Lambert played at versus LaVon Kirkland when he played. And the thing is, look, he's going to get beat at times. He's going to miss tackles at times because he's playing with speed. And if he takes a bad angle, there's a chance for explosive plays against the Steelers. But generally pretty good, and it was an interesting game for the Steelers defense because we saw them play about as vanilla as we'll see them play all year. They played 7-8 man kind of soft zone coverage, blitzed very rarely. We could probably count them on one hand how many times they blitzed, Dave, and then they did bend not break it. We saw it in the preseason. We saw it plenty of times last year. And did enough and got a couple fourth down stops, and a couple turnovers. So you know, not the better side of the ball, but a decent start for the defense. And they were certainly helped out by some breaks. Kirk Cousins was really not very good, particularly early in this game.
Yeah, I think early on they did get those breaks with Cousins not being sharp at all. And I think didn't Jordan Reed have a early kind of drop in there as well, too? The Steelers helped them out a ton with some missed tackles. And, you know, I wrote before this game, David, that I thought the Steelers ought to be kind of careful when it comes to blitzing, because if you go back and you look at how Kirk Cousins performed last season against the blitz, it was nothing to him. He always usually would find the hot guy there. Most of his game is predicated around the short pass anyway. Completed a very, very, as you would expect, a very, very high percentage of passes of 10, you know, of 10 yards or less, including behind the line of scrimmage last year. So, you know, if they were to have blitzed a lot in that game, you know, I'm not convinced that it would have helped them, because I think Cousins would have been able to find the hot guy there and probably would have, you know, had success just the same. With that said, look, the Steelers pass rush, we're going to be talking about this all season, unfortunately, David. And I think we kind of saw this one coming that they really didn't address the position, you know, during the offseason there. This team struggles to get any kind of pressure with four men, and when they do come and send numbers, they struggle to get pressure then as well, too. So it's something we're going to have to watch closely. The tackling, I thought, started off very, very poorly last night, but it did seem to get better. And as Hines Ward would like to say, I think you have to take your hat off and hand it to Robert Golden, because I thought he played a tremendous game.
He did. He made some big tackles early on big plays, and we saw, you know, we'll get into the kind of the schematics of this, Dave, as we focus on the defense here in the early part of the show. You know, they missed some tackles on Jordan Reed, and then Jordan Reed got dinged up on one of those plays where they did stop him on third down, and he became much less of a factor. He had three catches in that opening drive for the Skins, and then I think he only had three the rest of the game, three or four. And you had talked about numbers. That would you be okay with these numbers for Jordan Reed? And I think you hit it almost dead on what his overall numbers were for the game. And, you know, as the game went on, he became less of a factor versus what he was right at the beginning of that game. And then, you know, the Steelers made the tackling got better. The tackling was poor at times, very poor. I mean, on the touchdown drive, obviously, there was a play there where Vernon Davis, there were probably five missed tackles on that play alone. But they, because of the scheme that they used, playing the soft zone and dropping the linebackers deep, they were able to get a lot of guys at the ball, and that made the difference. It wasn't just one guy. They were gang tackling, and I think that was one of the keys to their success as the game went on.
Yeah, and they seemingly got the Redskins a lot of third and long situations, which kind of helps, and the Redskins helped in that aspect too with the penalties that they had in this game, kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And then you combine that with Cousins not being the most accurate animal in this game, it allowed them to kind of protect the sticks, if you will. And you know, especially in the second half, they made several key tackles up underneath there. And it was the old Dick LeBeau adage, right? Don't get beat over the top and tackle the catch.
Tackle the catch, exactly.
You know,
stop the run, tackle the catch, and don't give up the big play.
Yeah, boy, where have we seen and talked about that before, huh? This team has got to get better tackling consistently throughout a whole game. And as we mentioned, you know, finding a way to get pressure with four guys, and why, you know, look, I understand not blitzing a lot in this game. I even called for not blitzing a lot in this game, but some instances only rushing three. I'm not so much a fan of that, although it did seem to confuse Kirk Cousins at times. And look, we love to write and talk about this talk stat, David. The Redskins had three just three explosive plays in the game of 20 yards or more, and one of those came in the fourth quarter. So overall, they didn't give up the chunk plays on defense. They forced what? How many turnovers? One or two was it?
Two, the late interception.
Yeah, two turnovers there in the game, and you know, the offense the offense did the rest. How about taking your hat off and handing it to them?
Yeah. One or two other things on the defense. Yeah, we didn't see them blitz a lot. They did, you know, look, they got zero sacks. And other than L.J. Fort almost getting a strip sack when he came in for Shazier in the fourth quarter and kind of coming late, they didn't generate a ton of pressure. There were some times early when Hayward was in there. They did do a very good job against the run. But it was interesting, Dave, to watch the scheme and what they did. And I wanted to get to Lawrence Timmons because we've talked about this and highlighted this coming into the season. You know, the very first third down play, I think Timmons gets beat, misses a tackle on Jordan Reed, and he goes for another 10 to get the first down. They took him out, I think, on the next sequence when it was a third and long play, but he was on the field. You know, I know we don't have the snap counts quite yet, or I haven't seen him yet. But
I've got him.
He was on the field a lot more than I thought. But I guess when you're playing with seven or eight, you want a guy with the tackling ability he has because he's not really in coverage much. You know, in that zone coverage, he's less beatable, to just, you know, for lack of a better word, because he's not running with guys down the field. So that's probably why he stayed on the field. I still think he's a liability, and I'm not sure I now think Lawrence Timmons is going to be, you know, kind of a guy who maybe is even starting the season in Week 10.
Well, here's the thing. In today's NFL, a guy like Timmons at his age, you just can't have him running with people. I mean, I think that was obvious before this game even started. And I think you'll see as the season goes on. You know what stuck out in this game, David, especially in the first half, if you go back and watch this thing, how lost Sean Davis and the snap, early on, how lost Sean Davis was. And because if you go back, you'll see William Gay really, really coaching up Sean Davis in this game. He was out of position a ton. There's one instance where Gay goes over, has a little chat with him, and then slaps him on the side of the helmet. You know, it's like, come on, you know this. You can pick this up. So what I'm trying to say is, I think as these younger players, you know, Artie Burns, Sean Davis, newcomer Justin Gilbert, as these guys get more acclimated and know what's going on with this defense, I think you'll see them have the ability to play more dime defense as the season wears on, and thus be able to remove Timmons off the field. So, Timmons played 53 of, 58 total snaps, defensive snaps in this game. I thought the most curious thing, kind of as you pointed out, there was L.J. Fort being the guy to come in and relieve Timmons. But when you think about it,
relieve
Shazier. When you think about it, L.J. Fort looked good in coverage during the preseason, did he not? You remember him carrying the Eagles tight end? Who was it? Ertz up the field in the red zone in that Eagles preseason game. You know, who would you rather have out there in obvious passing situations, a guy like L.J. Fort or a guy like, you know, Vince Williams?
You know, he wasn't out there much, but I thought L.J. Fort was dynamite in the preseason, so he was out there. He said it was the first defensive snaps he's gotten in 4 years, so put that in some perspective for you, getting on the field. But, yeah, that was interesting. How many snaps did Vince actually play?
Vince had seven. L.J. Fort had four, according to the initial data, and we'll, of course, double-check that as we do our game charting this week, but it'll probably be close, if not the exact, you know, numbers on that. And Ryan Shazier played 44 total snaps. So being as Timmons played 53 of 58, that should let you know roughly about how much, you know, dime they played, you know.
Yeah, and then Dave, let's tell me the snaps for Hargrave and McCullers, because Big Dan only got a couple. Hargrave didn't get as many as I suspected, and I'm not even sure I saw. I think Ricardo Matthews played a snap or two. I mean, there was a situation where There was one snap where on the field in one of their nickel packages, it was Hargrave was the only down lineman. There was no Tuitt or Hayward. It was a very odd formation because I was trying to figure out who wasn't on the field when Timmons and Davis were on the field, but they had taken off the two ends. What were the defensive line snaps?
Yeah, 13 for Hargrave, 10 for Daniel McCullers. I want to go back and see how many of McCullers came late in the game because it sure
all of them.
You know, it sure didn't seem like he was out there during the meat and potatoes, right? You asked about who Matthews as well, too. 16 total snaps for him. So, you know, you're looking at about what 25% eating into about 20. Well, you know, here's the true numbers on Hayward and Tuitt, and they're probably going to want to stick both these guys right around these numbers as the season goes on. Cam Hayward played 74% of the defensive snaps, and Stephon Tuitt, the healthier of the two coming into this game, played 81%. So, you know, I think they'd probably ideally like to have both those guys right around that 75% number as the season, you know, goes on. And obviously, if you get in blowout wins, you know, such as the Steelers did, hopefully they're taking most of the fourth quarters off moving forward.
Yeah, and I got to say I was watching this game intently. I haven't watched it again, and as we were finishing up and preparing for the post game show, I wasn't paying attention to exactly who was on the field the last time the Skins had the drive when they had kind of what I thought was a bit of a BS pass interference call on Ross Cockrell. But I guarantee you that's where Matthews and McCullers were getting their snaps because I didn't see much of them before that.
Ross Cockrell's an interesting animal, bless his heart, isn't he? At some point he's gonna lose that job this year, and as soon as they can get a guy like Gilbert up and at him, I think, you know, unfortunately, I think that's when we're gonna see him. He's a smart guy, just, you know, not the most physical guy, especially against the run. I just think his days are numbered as a starter, especially, well, you know, not just Gilbert, but Artie Burns as well, too. So, you know, as soon as they can get a guy like Artie Burns, I think you're going to gradually see Cockrell's snaps start to decrease here after the first quarter of the season.
What'd you think of the PI call on him?
Yeah, questionable. It seemed like more of a sympathy call. Boy, you go back, why doesn't a guy like Drake Kirkpatrick get that call against him when covering a guy like Martavis Bryant, right? Didn't we have a call like that or a non-call similar to that last year? Steelers-Bengals, I mean, if you're going to let a guy like Drake Kirkpatrick get away with something that was a little bit more, you know, flagrant, Than that, I think you got to let Cockrell get away with that against the Redskins.
I think if you watch that at full speed, you know, you realize in slow motion, you realize he got his arm in there, but he didn't touch him. And I think it was maybe a perfect textbook play. So I just, if you watch that at full speed, I thought it was a bad call. So, all right, well, let's get to the fun side of the ball. And they go three and out in the first possession. They throw an interception on the second. And look, we saw Eli Rogers early here. He didn't have a catch in the second half, but six catches in the first half. They use him early, and then Ben throws the interception to Eli. And I talked to Charlie about this in the post game, Charlie Batch. Look, Eli Rogers, he's got to drive his coverage man, the corner there, corner or safety, whoever it was. He's got to drive him inside to spread the space that he has, the zone to catch it, and then turn to the other side. And that's what Ben was saying. He has to drive inside and then turn out because that's where the ball is going to be delivered. And so Rogers turned the wrong way. It looked like a bad throw by Ben, but you knew when there was, you know, they were both talking about it immediately after the play. It's more likely just a miscommunication. I'm not killing Rogers here, but he just didn't run the pattern exactly the way he was supposed to. So the Steelers go two possessions, 37 yards, and a turnover. And from there, it was all wine and roses. Seven possessions, excluding kneel down, six scores, five touchdowns, and 400 yards of offense. It was something to behold.
Yeah, it was. You want to talk about some understated plays. What about, you know, on the sack fumble by Roethlisberger? What about that play by and hustle by Marquise Pouncey to help?
Great play. Game-changing play.
Yeah, I mean, it really, really was a big play. And the thing is you know, the performances by A.B. and D'Angelo Williams and Roethlisberger, that thing's going to get lost in the shuffle there, I think. Look, I will take those growing pains of Eli Rogers every day compared to what his upside certainly appears to be. David, you hit double over on Eli Rogers. 47 offensive snaps in the game against the Redskins. 69% of all offensive snaps. Yes, Marcus Wheaton was out, but let me say this: when Marcus Wheaton comes back, Marcus Wheaton won't be playing in the slot. Marcus Wheaton will have to battle for playing time with Sammy Coates and Darius Heyward-Bey. And look, I am so happy that there will be three dogs with one bone going after that one bone on the outside, because Sammy Coates still having some issues out there. And we'll see. You know, look, you can keep those guys fresh. You can utilize their skill sets out there. If need be, you can jump one of those guys inside to give Eli Rogers some time off there. But what a NFL debut for Eli Rogers, for sure. And boy, will he forever remember his first NFL touchdown. He'll be able to thank Breshad Breeland and Sammy Coates for that as well too. And Ben Roethlisberger talked about that play afterwards. While grateful for that fortuitous bounce, Ben says, look, Eli has to take two guys with him on that play inside, and Sammy's got to flatten out that route a little bit better to get himself open. So the Steelers luckily came out of that with a touchdown on that short pass there, and both those young wide receivers will learn in the process. Now let's get to big boy.
Let's discuss Coates for one more second. You know, the drop on the wide receiver screen. Dave, I haven't had a chance to look enough at what happened on the touchdown pass. Was that pass from Ben? Did that bounce off Breeland, or did that hit Coates?
It's really hard to tell. It looks like it might have, like, both guys got hands on it. You know, well, I'm sure we'll get a better look when the all 22 view comes out on this. But it is really, I think Breeland might have gotten more of that. He seemed to really undercut that route a little bit better. And as Roethlisberger says, he's got to flatten that thing out a little bit better, and maybe try to sell some sort of fake to the outside first. And then, as he said, Eli's got to try to do a better job of taking a couple of guys with him to create that spacing there.
He certainly fired it in there, I'll tell you that.
yeah, he did.
That was 95 miles an hour.
Yeah, boy, and what, you know what? Look, say what you will about that play, but for Eli Rogers to be able to come down with that really says something about hand-eye coordination and keeping your head on the swivel at all times. So they got away with one. Look, Roethlisberger got away with what? Couple, two or three throws that probably should have been picked in that game. On top of it, sometimes it's better to be lucky and good. They certainly were in that exact situation there. All right.
Yeah, they got some breaks with the Pouncey play that you highlighted. That was a great play. Ben ended up recovering the fumble. On the touchdown, they get that break. Let's get to the big dogs. And I guess we should start with Ben because, you know, Dave, I've just about finished doing my write-up for this game. And, you know, one of the things I wrote about is it's amazing, and I mentioned this the other day, that the conversation about Ben being a cerebral quarterback. And you talk about the things he does. Just before we get into the fun stuff, I mean, you know, Football Outsiders has a new stat that they developed last year called Alex, which is trying to take into account that basically is designed to measure the quarterback's aggressiveness by looking at the depth of passes in relation to the first down marker. So are you checking down all the time, or are you taking shots? And people probably aren't surprised that Roethlisberger had the highest Alex of any QB since 2007. The Steelers take shots. And we just saw this in this game yesterday. And I tried to highlight this last year after the San Francisco game in week two, and I said it 20 times on Twitter last night. This is the Steelers' MO. They know when they have short yardage down a distance, third or fourth down, and short yardage, if teams stack the box on them, they're going to have outside matchups where they have one-on-one coverage, man coverage, and they don't care whether it's Antonio Brown, Sammy Coates, Marcus Wheaton, or Darius Heyward-Bey. They are going to take shots. And I know when they don't convert, those fans go absolutely ballistic. But this is what you get, and you can blow games open. You get man coverage there without Antonio Brown. And, you know, Tomlin said after the game that it was the call on 4th-and-1. I don't know if it was the call or it was a hand signal that it was a run-pass option. Whatever it was, they sold the play action. Perfect throw, perfect catch. And it's just, I mean, it really is fantastic to watch these guys go to work.
Yes, absolutely. And I wrote extensively over the summer about Ben and Marcus Wheaton saying how Ben loves to throw deep on third and short and fourth and short situations there. Look, I mean, yeah, we had to take Tomlin for his word for, you know, saying that was the call. I believe it was the call. I really didn't see, and I think Ben pretty much agreed after the game too, that was the call as well in that situation there. You're right, though. It's a type of and look, there's still people bitching about it this morning, right? You know, still shouldn't have done that. You know, you can't even win the results-based fans, right? You know, if you can't win those guys over, who can you win over in situations like that? But look, I mean, they knew that the Redskins were going to stack the box in that fourth and short situation. You look outside. Now, look, here's probably the thing. If they had probably shown something else in that situation and Ben doesn't look out there and see a single coverage on the outside with no safety help, then probably he checks to something else, right? You know, especially in a 4th-and-1 situation there. I mean, you're not going to throw against, into a shell type coverage. I wouldn't think you would in 4th-and-1, but you got the best wide receiver in the game singled up one-on-one on the outside. Why not give him a chance there? But I admit I did hold my breath. There was excellent play action by Ben on that play there as well. And look, I mean, it ended up in 6. How can you be mad at that?
Yeah, and so, Dave, the question is, you know, if you watch that replay, you'll see Eli Rogers wide open underneath, and then for a little bit further down, there's another crossing route. I'm not sure who ran it, but also wide open. And so, again, this was a conversation that we had on the postgame. And if you missed the postgame and you want to hear it, it was my first time working with Charlie, and I think we had a really good show. Because, you know, Charlie obviously knows things that Dave and I don't. And when we talked about, you know, what Foster and Pouncey do and the interaction that they have on the snap count. And one of the things on that, he said, you know, they got the touchdown, but immediately, you know, they go over and look at the pictures on the sideline. And Rodgers, you know, is going to point out that he was wide open. And so you remember a little bit later, they've got a similar situation on, I can't remember if it was a 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1, but Rodgers has an option route off the line of scrimmage. He takes it inside. He beats his guy. I think it was Josh Norman. He beats him by a step and a half. And Ben just, you know, makes a 3-yard throw, and it goes for a big gain. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff you learn. You see from it. There was a play last year when Ben missed Heath Miller on a cross right at the goal line on a play that they ended up not scoring on against the Bengals later in the season. But these are the types of things that, you know, some insights. And he did have guys open there. And I just, Dave, I'll tell you what I love what Ben's doing these days is the hot reads, getting the ball out of his hands. You know, he did it to D'Angelo Williams once. He did it to Spaeth once or twice. He did it to Eli Rogers. You know, he's going to see this stuff, get him the ball, and let those guys make plays. And he really has become a cerebral quarterback. And, you know, maybe the numbers aren't off the charts, but in terms of QBR, you know, we have passer rating, we have QBR, two different things, and neither are a perfect stat. But he led the NFL in QBR in week 1. D'Angelo Williams led the NFL in rushing by 37 yards in week 1. Antonio Brown has 100 yards receiving. Just so many weapons and just such a good performance after that first quarter.
Yeah, to go back and hit on a few things that you talked about with that Alex rating and all like that. You know, as I've liked to call these in the past, failed completions. You know, Ben does a good job of not having many failed completions. And you know, and what that means is obviously you don't want to you you don't want to throw short of the sticks either, too, in certain situations, especially third and long. Now, he did early in the game on that pass to D'Angelo Williams there. But, yeah, he is a very, very aggressive quarterback. And the other thing that you kind of hit on was that second fourth down conversion that they had. Who says you can't run the same play twice and get away with it? I put a GIF of that up this morning with kind of the headline stealing, if you will, you know, as a definition, because that was the same formation, same play basically as they ran on that fourth and one or fourth and short touchdown to Antonio Brown earlier in the game. This time, however, Eli is wide open across the middle there and has easy reception.
Yeah, Dave, so the passing game really got going. And, I don't know if you can point to a specific play and say, you know, this is what happened. But, you know, we talked about that strip sack, which was the only sack in the game when Kerrigan gets by Villanueva. And they get the ball. Then they run the screen to D'Angelo Williams, which seemed to get him jump-started. And then I really liked the next play. And I'm sure you remember it. It's, you know, it's a third and long. And he throws downfield to Antonio Brown, who is well covered on the play. And Antonio Brown, this is where you see the battle in Antonio Brown, comes back. That is not an easy catch. It's up high. He's got a defender on him. And Gruden makes a point on the TV broadcast of talking about he goes up, fights for the ball, pulls it into his body to protect it. And then from there, the Steelers offense just was on all cylinders the rest of the game.
Boy, we saw Antonio Brown's entire catch radius in this game, didn't we? I mean, you had the back shoulder. You had him going up and getting that one. You had another one over there to the side that Ben had thrown low that AB had to contort his body to get back. You had the over-the-shoulder kind of catch that he had on one of the touchdowns. David, I've watched football since what, late 1970s. I can't remember a wide receiver as dynamic. You know, I mean, look, Jerry Rice was obviously fantastic. There's been some great wide receivers that have played this game. Antonio Brown is just absolutely incredible, and you just run out of superlatives and everything to describe his play.
Yeah, I was going to use the exact same phrase. You run out of superlatives. We both try to write about it every week, and, you know, it almost sounds a little bit silly. And it's not fanboy stuff, because I think, you know, we realize that everybody around the NFL now realizes this, you know, that, you know, when the NFL Network or different rankings are putting him as the best or one of the three best players in the game, you see this stuff. And, you know, defenses know it's not – this is not a guy who is, you know, doing this for the first time. He's been doing this for years. And obviously the question in the game, Dave, is, you know, the Josh Norman situation. Did the Redskins make a massive mistake paying this guy $15 million and, you know, not having him shadow Antonio Brown around the field? So there are two ways to look at it. One is, yes, they made the enormous mistake. Or two things here. One is John Gruden pointed out that, yeah, you can move Norman, but you got to remember that impacts, you know, he said 10, but let's say that impacts, you know, five or six other guys in terms of what they're asked to do. So there is a bigger picture aspect of it other than just having Josh Norman shadow Antonio Brown. And then, as Matt Williamson said with me on the post game, it's, you know, the game plan maybe isn't all that bad if you say, look, I'm going to leave Josh Norman on his side, and whoever they put over there, Sammy Coates, or if it had been Marcus Wheaton or, you know, Darius Heyward-Bey, or at times Antonio Brown, I'm going to say, okay, he's got his, and I'm going to give Breland massive help on the other side. So if Brown's over there, we got that covered. As a strategic game plan, that doesn't sound like a bad game plan. It just didn't work.
I'm telling you, if I got Josh Norman, I want him following Antonio Brown all over the field, if you ask me. Per ESPN, Norman lined up against Antonio Brown on 23 of 68 plays, offensive plays the Steelers ran in that game, of which 12 were passing plays. I think Antonio Brown was targeted twice with Norman in coverage, 0 for 2, and of course one of those was the was the one that looked like Antonio caught it first, and then of course knocked out and eventually, you know, ruled a incompletion and confirmed after review, which by the way was the right call.
Absolutely, and I think we both said it at the time. He clearly catches the ball. There's no doubt about the fact that he has possession of the ball, but he doesn't move his feet. He turns his hips. He didn't make a football move. To me, you know, a lot of people on Twitter were questioning this call before the result came out. To me, this is one of the easier ones we've seen. He didn't move his feet. He wasn't going to be a catch.
Yeah, that was a pass breakup all the way, and a fortunate one for the Steelers, because obviously you're in the red zone there, and you know you're going to lose possession of the football there. But you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, I think you go back to the time when Norman was with the Panthers. I'm trying to remember how much he played on the other side and how much following around he actually did with them. You know, if it was up...
None, right? He didn't do any of it.
Yeah, I think he's primarily a guy that performs best on that side of the football field. So, once again, if you're going to pay a cornerback that kind of money, you know, I want him, especially you play the best wide receiver in the league and Antonio Brown, I'd take my chances on putting my best guy on him and make the Steelers beat me somewhere else with somebody else, or at the very least make their best player beat my best defensive player. And look, Breland's no slouch. Let's get that out there right now. Rashad,
we're gonna be saying that a lot this year.
I mean, we're gonna go back after the year, you know, a couple of games from now, and say, man, look at the Breland's having a nice season there. What the heck did Antonio Brown do to him? Look, there's not anybody in this league right now that can cover Antonio Brown one on one outside. And man, was Ben just dropping them in the bucket or what?
Which did you like better, the first touchdown pass or the second touchdown pass? Because on the first one, for some reason, I thought Breland slowed up half a step, and that's what cost him. And then the second one, kind of the same thing, is you just see Antonio Brown's acceleration. I mean, he is running full speed the whole time, and two touchdowns.
Yeah, you know, that second one, you know, that drill that they do during training camp all the time, to throwing the football into the trash cans. That's exactly what that reminded me of. I don't think Roethlisberger could have put that ball there even better. What about the low snap, picking it up off of the turf, and the one that he just really, I mean, how did he know I know he knows where Sammy Coates should probably be down the field there, but I mean, he just absolutely just lobbed that one up right into the arms of Sammy Coates, who made a nice catch down the left side.
That might have been my favorite play, because Gene Collier, I loved his comment on Twitter. Roethlisberger drops back, takes one dribble, and sees Coates, you know, hits him down the left sideline, because you know he had to look down. Now the ball didn't bounce away from him, but he's still taking his eyes off the defense. And I don't, you know, what I'd be interested to ask him, Dave, is did you know that's where you wanted to go pre-snap? Or because of what happened, did you know that's where you could go without really being in danger, because, you know, you could overthrow it or throw it out of bounds there and you know, not take a sack or not have an interception? Because that was a great play.
Yeah, five explosive plays for the Steelers in that game there versus, what do we say, three for the Redskins. I mean, Roethlisberger, sometimes he stands in that pocket and he escapes some things that I just – I don't know how he does it, you know, and on the move, making some of those throws on the move. Jesse James, I thought, had a decent game. He's not going to probably grade out, you know, extremely high because of some blocking issues that he had. But, look, I think this is a guy that can move the chains for you in certain situations if need be. The offensive line just absolutely just balled, and really they should have, because you look at what the you know, we talked ahead of the game about the shape of the Redskins defensive line, you know, having to start Ziggy Hood out there. I think they had a few guys banged up on the injury report entering the game as questionable as well too. But look, you still got to win those battles. It's one thing to write it out on paper and say these are matchups that that an offensive line should win, they won them. And boy, they did everything. Split zone runs. They had some dart runs with Marcus Gilbert pulling from right to left across the formation. You had some counter runs in there with David DeCastro as well. And boy, and props to D'Angelo Williams too. You want to talk about? Look, we're just going to look at the total yards. You know, when you go to the stat book here, but there are a lot of short runs that D'Angelo Williams had in this game that really, in my opinion, really changed the complexion of the game and really kept the sticks moving, kept drives alive and stuff like that. So, you know, it's easy to get caught up in the 6-7, you know, 8-yard gains, you know, with great blocking. But what about those hard-fought yards, those 1-2-3-yard gains that actually moved the sticks? I think that's something that D'Angelo Williams really, really does great. And, boy, that counter that Alex already broke down on the site late in the game to that touchdown. What a thing of beauty that was.
What a great cut he made there. Sammy Coates with a wham block, or, you know, a crackback block, whatever you want to call it, in there to kind of seal it a little bit. But he hits that crease between those two defenders and he's gone. And Dave, I was just looking back at numbers. This is his third highest yardage game since 2010. He had a 200-yard game the last game of 2012. With Carolina, and then he had a game last year where he had 170 for the Steelers. As I said, he leads the NFL in rushing by 37 yards after week one. He's 33 years old. He had, you know, I know that this is, you know, nobody wants anybody to compare anybody to Le'Veon Bell, but both of these guys show unbelievable patience and vision, and they allow these blocks to get set. They do. They hit the creases. He doesn't have quite the burst that Le'Veon has, and neither of them have breakaway speed, let's be honest about it. But just a great effort from him. You know, another 28 yards catching the ball out of the backfield, which last year I think that was one of the surprises, how effective he was kind of filling in for Bell doing that role. They were able to split him wide. They went five wide, empty set, you know, more than a few times. It's just it boggles the mind to think of what this offense, you know, would be with if you threw in, you know, a Marcus Wheaton, a Ladarius Green, and you have Bell to, you know, Bell and Williams to use there. What's the word when you say it's too much? It's laughable how much talent they have on the offensive side. And this is without even talking about the really good job the offensive line did, pulling Gilbert, pulling DeCastro, doing some different stuff. You know, Villanueva is still the weak link there, but it's man, it's, you know, 38 points in week one. It feels like not the tip of the iceberg, but it feels like we're seeing it all right away.
Villanueva is the weak link, which I think he was last night. I'll take that weakest link right now for sure. I think he's just going to continue to slowly get better. I don't think does he have the ceiling of Joe Thomas? No, nobody's going to say that. But remember, this guy is still learning. You know, here, and look, I mean, he made some great run blocks. He missed some run blocks at the second level as well. So as long as he doesn't get Ben Roethlisberger clobbered, he's going to give up 7-8 sacks this year. You know it's coming. It's going to happen. And I was going to go the same direction that you just went there. This is a team without Marcus Wheaton. This is David, you forgot Roosevelt Nix. They didn't have
Roosevelt Nix, right?
They had their skull cracker back there for 10 or 12 plays in this game. Ladarius Green, you already mentioned. Martavis Bryant obviously won't be there the entire season. Le'Veon Bell won't get back until week four of the season. You had a couple of young wide receivers in this game too as well that made mistakes that are probably going to get better as the season, you know, progresses here. What's going to stop this offense? Just themselves?
Turnovers is the only thing that's going to stop this offense. They're too good. They're too talented. There'll be a week where they have a bad game, or a week or two. But just a really solid effort. And just to kind of get into a couple other things, the special teams, again, very solid. We're not going to see many kick returns this year. We didn't see the Steelers return any. The Skins returned one. Jordan Berry kind of picked off where he left off in the preseason with an okay first punt that Crowder made a huge mistake by fair catching, and then a good second punt, 61 yards. Boswell hits his only field goal. you know, we didn't see a lot on the coverage unit, so there's not a lot to get into. Let me just ask you a couple things about Mike Tomlin. Look, the offensive game plan was great. Credit to them. We've talked about what Butler did schematically. We didn't see much dime, if any dime. I meant to ask you, Dave, Artie Burns, 3 or 4 snaps, and Justin Gilbert, none? Is that how that
worked
out?
Yeah, nothing for Justin Gilbert in this game. So,
How many did Artie have?
Artie had 9 defensive snaps and 9 special team snaps.
Okay, so a couple more than I saw out there. And, of course, without the All-22, sometimes that's tough to see.
But, Gilbert's coming. Yeah, you have to think probably even starting this week. Start probably getting some work as a kick returner. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, it's only a matter of time before Cockrell's snaps start decreasing on the outside, whether it be Artie Burns, whether it be Justin Gilbert, what have you, you know. But in the meantime, too, hopefully at some point as the season progresses, we'll start seeing Lawrence Timmons start coming off the field a little bit more in kind of obvious, you know, passing situations here. So a lot of miscommunication on defense in this game, David, for this opener. Hopefully that starts.
Which is exactly what happened in week one last year against the Patriots. Huge miscommunication, left Gronk uncovered for a touchdown, some other, you know, big problems. But it was better this year in week one. Let me just a couple things on the coaching side. One, were you surprised Mike Tomlin deferred?
Nah, I mean, look, I be honest with you, I haven't given it a lot of thought.
Were you at all surprised he didn't go for 2 after the first touchdown?
Yes.
And then, you know, not a big deal, but they didn't exactly use the timeouts perfectly at the end of the first half. They had a ton of time, so there was no reason to call the timeouts, but, you know, is what it
is.
Yeah,
you're gonna lose your paycheck this week, I think. no compensation for you this week. Look, I mean, I thought it was a well-coached game by the Steelers, and Tomlin's decision. Look, no risk it, no biscuit. That's what Bruce Arians likes to say these days. And Tomlin, boy, he not afraid to go for it on fourth and short situations there. And then on top of it, not afraid to throw for it as well. So I know a lot of people were gritting their teeth, sitting on their hands, or what have you there. But look, as we talked about this, the offense is definitely the thing that's going to keep this team alive. And if this defense can just start showing some tackling improvement and start, I'll hold my breath on the pressure on the 4-man pressure there. But you know, they can just start getting some consistent pressure from the front and tackling the catch and making these catches and not giving up, you know, explosive plays or
no, they were going to go 16-0 and win.
Yeah, catches up underneath on third down that turn into first downs. You know, the type of stuff that have driven us crazy the last couple of years. I mean, this team legitimately could go what, 14-2? You know.
Yeah, no doubt. What'd you think of the twerk?
Yeah, let those kids play, man. I mean, it's a no fun league anyway. If somebody gets thoroughly upset about that, I mean, man, turn your TV off. I mean, geez. I mean, but hey, rules are the rules, and it's going to cost him.
He didn't celebrate with anybody, and it didn't look like he was taunting. I don't know what the rule was in that case.
It's in the bylaws about vulgar, sexually expressive celebrations, and that Hingle McCringleberry pelvic thrust twerk definitely qualified for that. So that's going to cost him what, about $12,000, I think.
All right. Well, you know, we'll be right back at this tomorrow. We'll talk a lot more about what we see when we go back through the tape and talk about the Tomlin presser, and we'll get we'll get one of the Bengal guys to be with us tomorrow.
All right,
as well.
A lot of great content coming up the next couple of days on SteelersDepot.com. We invite you to check that out as well. Make sure you're listening to David's show on 970 ESPN as well, too. We'll be back at it, as he said, on Wednesday to recap the Mike Tomlin press conference. You can follow me on Twitter at SteelersDepot. Follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button up top, if you will. David, have a great day. Sleep fast. We'll talk to you Wednesday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.